What is Christianity? Christianity is an explanation of all of reality. There's not one square inch of human existence as to which Christ, who is sovereign over all, does not cry out, "My!"
This is Breakpoint This Week, a weekly briefing on faith, culture, worldview, and mission with John Stonestreet of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview and filling in for Ed Stetzer, Warren Cole Smith.
Well, welcome to Breakpoint This Week. Joined again this week by Warren Smith. Warren's the Vice President of Mission Advancement at the Colson Center, and you can catch his articles at breakpoint.org, including his weekly review. Warren, I know that one of the stories that you had in your weekly review is something that you and I have been talking about, tweeting about, and really has dominated really a whole lot of cultural conversations, and that is the two states this week that are advancing I want to say radical abortion laws, but really, here's the thing I also want folks to understand. It's radical because of what the law itself is. It's not radical for the pro-choice movement, the pro-abortion movement. Like, I think this is the new normal of the pro. I mean, we're no longer in a safe, legal, and rare sort of mindset in terms of our nation or the pro-abortion forces. But of course, I'm talking about New York passed a law basically legalizing late-term abortion, putting it on the books. Up until birth, and then there was an amazing set of exchanges this week in the state of Virginia as they kind of followed suit. And when Governor Cuomo signed the law in New York, he said he hoped that this would be a law that was kind of a model legislation for other states, and that seems to be what we are seeing. It looks like other states are now kind of lining up, including Rhode Island, behind Virginia, to pass basically abortion at any time in pregnancy, right up until birth. And the other thing that's worth mentioning is this is completely out of step with the American people. I think the last number I saw, 75% are against late-term abortions. But is this the new normal for the pro-abortion movement?
Well, I think, John, it probably is the new normal. But as you say, it may be the old normal as well. And they're just kind of going public with this idea that because they can, at least they can in some states. You mentioned New York. I think Rhode Island and Virginia are considering similar laws that I know about. There may be others as well. And, you know, Rhode Island, it's in the New England area, of course, the Northeast, which is historically, traditionally liberal. But for a law like this to show up in Virginia, and it's not a law yet, they're just considering it. I want to be clear about that. Really does, I think, suggest, as you've suggested, that something new and different is happening here.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the exchange that took place in Virginia. First of all, you had a very direct line of questioning between the sponsor of the bill and a conservative representative, basically asking questions like, "What, you know, what does this mean? Is, you know, what would happen if a woman were actively in labor and then determines that she doesn't want the child anymore, and you know, a doctor signs off on it? Would that be okay?" And the answer was yes. I mean, the sponsor of the bill tried to hem and haw a little bit, but she was actually forced to admit that yes, I mean, this would include babies right up until the point. So we're not talking about viability anymore. Of course, viability now is somewhere around 22, 23 weeks. You know, there's these amazing stories of these children being saved. But we're talking about, I mean, this isn't a question of viability at all. This is literally a mom deciding this baby is wanted and therefore should be protected or not.
Yeah, that's right. And the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, also kind of added to the controversy. He was asked about the bill on a radio program, and he was asked directly whether an infant who was in a car accident or, you know, was born deformed or disabled could be left to die. And he seemed to answer yes to that. And there were a lot of course, that created a whole new round of controversy. But I think that's probably the honest answer. I mean, this law is so radical that the answer probably is yes in both of those situations. And as you said, John, completely out of step with the American
people. Let me just kind of quote what the governor of Virginia said. I can tell you, he said, exactly what would happen. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desire, then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. And so then on Thursday morning, the governor tweets out, "I've cared for children my whole life." This is another interesting, disturbing part of this story, is that the governor of Virginia is a pediatrician. And so he tweets out, "I've been caring for children my whole life." And, you know, he kind of used the outrage word of the week, you know, it's unconscionable or whatever, to say anything otherwise. But like, Governor, no one's putting words in your mouth. Like, you literally said the baby would be delivered and would be resuscitated if the mother desired it, which I guess assumes it would not be resuscitated. In other words, you've cared for children your own life, but you just said this child would not be cared for if that's not what the mother and the family desired. I mean, this is not putting words in anyone's mouth at all.
That's right. It's not. I mean, it's just, again, you know, John, you started off by saying, is this the new normal? It's not clear to me. Maybe this is the old normal.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I want to talk a little bit about the legal background, because a lot of people don't realize what these bills are doing is not actually legalizing something that's not already allowed. Like, for example, the state of Virginia already allows third trimester abortion when the woman's life or health is at risk. Up until now, it had to be certified by three physicians. This bill would reduce that down to one physician, and it actually expands what we mean here by, you know, the woman's life or health. And that's the really fuzzy language, woman's life or health. What do we mean by health? New York, for example, the New York bill actually specified that by health, it's not just physical health. It's actually also emotional health. It is even putting categories of finances. In other words, it really kind of reduces down to this kind of inner impulse of whether I feel good about this or I don't feel good about this. So these are exceptions big enough to drive a Mack truck through. And in the, you know, Virginia, here we have these kind of judicial interpretations, and now we're kind of putting them specifically in the law that it really just takes one doctor. Here's what concerns me about that, Warren. And I had somebody respond to my on Twitter this week saying, well, you know, this is why politicians shouldn't be involved in it. It should just be doctors, because doctors have the patient's best interest in mind. They're supposed to do no harm. And you think, well, do no harm to whom? You know, are we talking about do no harm to the mother or no harm to the child? Obviously, abortion does harm to the child. But also, where is this understanding that, you know, that the doctors are somehow exempt from the fall? You know, like, doctors themselves don't have political agendas. I mean, do we need to put a picture up of Dr. Kermit Gosnell on every Twitter feed that actually suggests that doctors don't, you know, might not suffer from a conscience problem as well?
That's exactly right. Well, I think that's a great point. Doctors are subject to the fall. You know, you can't take the politics out of politics. And, you know, the cultural values, historical cultural values should be at play here. The people of the United States should have a say in this. It should not just be some elite group, especially a group like the way some of these professional associations, the American Medical Association, has become, where they have become, and I want to be careful about how, I don't want to be too inflammatory in the language that I use here, John, but a lot of times these medical associations and other professional associations are small enough that a committed radical fringe can take over these associations and can dictate terms to the members of that association. And I believe that that has happened to a certain extent in organizations like the American Medical Association and the American Psychological Association. You know, we should not look to these associations as purveyors of the gospel truth, because in many cases, what they are teaching, what they are promoting is antithetical to the gospel truth.
One other aspect of this story. So now we've got New York, we've got Virginia, we've got other states lining up. You mentioned Rhode Island. This is new, where pro-abortion advocates are going to the states. If you kind of look at the last 10, 15 years of history on this debate about abortion in America, Roe v. Wade was kind of largely considered settled law at the federal level. And it was just really in the last 5 to 10 years where pro-life activists went and really started to develop legislative strategies on a state-by-state basis. And so we saw, for example, in Texas, some amazing advances there before, based again on Roe v. Wade, about an undue burden, or actually I guess that's specifically from Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that basically access to abortion has to be open. You can't place an undue burden on the woman. That some of these state legislative initiatives were turned over on that basis. But you saw amazing things advanced in Texas and Mississippi and Alabama and many of the states that are heavily pro-life. But you didn't see a whole lot of pro-abortion initiatives at the state level. Now, you know, we're seeing this flurry of them. It's almost like the roles are reversed, yep, where with the remade Supreme Court, there's this thought you know, that Roe v. Wade actually might be reversed. And if it is, then there needs to be state-level legislation passed to bolster up the right to an abortion. So this is an interesting development as well.
Well, I agree. It's a very interesting development. As you said, the pro-life movement, you know, as you also said, 10 years ago or so, got smart about this. And they realized that they could severely limit abortions at the state level by passing laws at the state. And great organizations like Americans United for Life, for example, started coming up with model legislation, working with state legislatures, and there were some really remarkable and helpful restrictions placed on abortion. Didn't eliminate abortion in these states, but in many cases reduced the number of abortions dramatically. And now the progressive, the pro-abortion side are taking up this same technique. In fact, someone, John, you and I were talking with an attorney recently, and he said that in some ways it's ironic that liberals have discovered federalism, that liberals have discovered states' rights, which is something that historically that's been what conservatives have promoted. So it is a very, very interesting development.
Well, come to breakpoint.org, click on the link on the homepage. It says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast. We did an awful lot of content this week having to do with the issue of abortion. Also, just recently had a series on our podcast on how you can actually articulate a pro-life position and answer the dominant pro-choice talking points that you hear in day-to-day conversations. So we'll link to all of that at breakpoint.org. Just click on the button there that says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to our podcast and never miss a Breakpoint This Week or any of these great other training programs that we make available. You're listening to Breakpoint This Week with Warren Smith and John Stone Street. Stay with us.
We invite you to visit Breakpoint.org. While you're at our website, be sure to browse our online Colson Center store of great books and other resources. And you can link up to our social media sites like Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back. I'm Warren Smith. You're listening to Breakpoint This Week. I've got John Stone Street with me. And John, development happened in the Asia Bibi case. Many, of course, know that Asia Bibi was the Christian woman who spent 8 years on death row in Pakistan because of blasphemy charges. The Pakistan Supreme Court said that she could go free last October, but that didn't happen. And finally, just within the last week or so, the Supreme Court of Pakistan affirmed its earlier decision. And now, hopefully, she really will go free, though she's not out of danger yet.
She's not out of danger as long as she's in Pakistan. And that's something, of course, that we've talked about on this program. We've also talked about it on our podcast with Mindy Belts, who has of World Magazine, who has her nose to the ground on these sorts of issues. I mean, Pakistan is known for kind of mob rule when it comes to Muslim extremists hunting down Christians. They're also known for the trumped up blasphemy charges. So here you have, on Tuesday, when the Supreme Court reviewed the case, they basically just kind of mocked the other side, saying you don't even have a case. Well, I mean, that tells you where we're at in Pakistan. So here you have a case where the blasphemy charges didn't really hold any water. And yet Asia Bibi spent 8 years on death row for those charges. And so this is the state that she's in. And, of course, now she's free to leave the country. She was, even though she was acquitted back in October, she was not allowed to leave the country. And I think there's a practical level of just getting out safely when, you know, even over Christmas, we saw reports of Muslims going door to door looking for her. This is great news that the decision was upheld. She's still not safe. And it also brings up something else. And you and I have talked about this offline. And we've got to say, you know, one of the things that we've done here at Breakpoint This Week is we have been willing to not play politics. Hopefully, we try to praise the good when it's good and critique the bad or to critique the lack of good. And I think that's what's happened in this case. We know that President Trump and his administration have put a hard line on immigration. And I think actually a whole lot needs to be done at the border. I don't think we have a secure border. I agree with that. Don't always agree with all the rhetoric that's used by this administration. I'm okay with the wall. I don't really have strong feelings one way or the other about it. I think the Democratic Party, went from being having very clear statements about needing to control the border to now not. And, you know, there's a whole lot of hypocrisy about, you know, the wall being unjust and all that stuff I can agree with. And yet at the same time, it seems that the president's tough stance on immigration has kept him from extending a hand to refugees and offering asylum to those who need it. And this is coming on the tail end. Let me just be clear. of both the vice president and the president mentioning, both in the campaigns as well as since then, that this was going to be an administration that was going to stand up for persecuted religious minorities, especially Christians. We know about the famous Muslim ban, but even when that was being articulated, it was like, well, there's going to be an exception for Christians. But this administration has allowed fewer Christian refugees in the country than any administration. Yep. Things are not going well. We're leaving some of our brothers and sisters who are like the dictionary definition of asylum seekers that you would want to take care of, leaving them high and dry. And Ozzie Abebe's one of them.
Well, that's absolutely right, John. And as a consequence of what you just said, it's likely that Ozzie Abebe will not be able to come to the United States, at least not directly. Right now, they're talking about her going to Canada if she is able to get out of Pakistan. We don't know for sure exactly where she's going to end up. And as we, John, you and I talked about last week, there are more than 200 million Christians around the world that are living in countries where their religious liberty is severely restricted. And I agree with you that a nation is not a nation if it can't protect its borders, if it can't protect its own national sovereignty. It is not really truly a nation in the anything resembling a reasonable definition of that word. On the other hand, whenever we've got Christian brothers and sisters who are freedom-loving people, who are godly people in many cases, hardworking people, who are being persecuted severely around the world, and our laws prevent us from coming to their aid, there's something wrong with that too.
Well, there is. And to me, this is a political win. That's the other thing that I don't understand, is that obviously the president has a high level of support among evangelicals. And most evangelicals, I think, are at the same place. Yep. Where, yeah, I mean, a nation's not a nation who can't control its borders. Let's fix that problem. But offering Ozzie Abebe, and I'm not even saying she should be in America. It looks like she should be in Canada with family. And that's probably a safe place for her. And that's fine. But to not even extend the offer of asylum, to not even – what's going on with that? And then, of course, if this weren't in, also in the context of, you know, a couple hundred Iranian persecuted Christians that haven't been offered asylum as well. Like, really, what's going on with this? To do both is both possible, and it would be, I think, a huge political win for the president. It would prove that he can be both compassionate to those that are in need of asylum and also be tough when it comes to border security. Why can't both of those be true in the same administration at the same time?
Yeah, it is a little hard to understand exactly why he's taking this position, but there you have it. And I think you were, I really admire what you just said a few minutes ago, John, that as Christians, we should speak truth to power. We should praise the good, the true, and the beautiful where we find it, but we should also maintain our independence enough so that we are standing on the gospel and not standing on the platform of any particular political party.
You're listening to Breakpoint This Week with Warren Smith and John Stone Street. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You can learn more about Breakpoint and the Colson Center for Christian Worldview when you visit breakpoint.org. That's breakpoint.org.
Well, we're back on Breakpoint This Week. John Stone Street here along with Warren Smith. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast, the Breakpoint Podcast. Wherever you do subscribe to your podcast, you can find us there. And you can find every Breakpoint commentary, every Breakpoint This Week episode, as well as some other content to help you think more clearly from a Christian worldview. Speaking of thinking clearly from a Christian worldview, of course, that applies to everything. So this is a less than smooth transition than I intended. But here we go. You know, back in 2017, we remember the horrific shooting in Las Vegas where a gunman from a 32nd floor fired 1,100 rounds into the crowd, killed 58, 900 people injured. And one of the kind of strange things has been how quiet the investigation has been. I mean, we're 16 months into it. And we don't have a motive. You know, we don't know a whole lot about this person. There isn't kind of all of these kind of shooter profiles that we've seen in other, you know, mass shootings. So we've kind of been waiting for that. But this week, a report came out. And I think it was remarkable, not for what it told us, but for what it couldn't tell us.
Well, that's right. It couldn't tell us, for example, who his important relationships in his life were, because he was unmarried. He was unchurched. He was, the report said, unrooted. He was adrift. And unfortunately, John, that is becoming the case for so many Americans. There have been books written about it that we've even talked about on Breakpoint. And for me, John, that reality, that report, that story highlights The fact that civil society really matters, that a community really matters, that being connected to other people in relationship really matters. And they matter in large part because that's how God made us. God made us in His image. He made us to be in relationship with Him, but He also made us to be in relationship with each other.
You know, I do a weekly segment with World Magazine's podcast, The World and Everything in It, with Nick Eicher, and I owe this story to Nick. It was just we talked about it on Friday, and this is just really a kind of a fascinating story because it just goes to so many of the things that we have talked about on Breakpoint and on Breakpoint this week. Like, for example, the so-called deaths from despair, the opioid addictions, the overdoses, the suicides, and how much of that is rooted to what it means, especially to be male in this cultural moment. Here's how the attacker's brother described him. No affiliation, no religion, no politics. He never cared about any of that stuff. And somebody might actually add, he never cared about much stuff at all. And if you kind of look at the plight of the American male right now, that's a pretty good description, where 30-year-olds play more video games than 18-year-olds, where the marriage rate is going down. I think it's important, too. It was one opinion writer, Timothy Carney, put it. This man was untethered to society. He was unmarried. He was unchurched. He was unrooted. He was adrift. I think there's a fundamental connection to being tethered to society and being married and churched. I know, you know, marriage rates are down, church attendance rates are down, but these have enormous consequences. This is kind of the classic conservative way of seeing society, that it's not just about individual citizens and it's not just about the state, that in between the state and individual citizens are all of these kind of layers of civil society, voluntary associations, you know, belonging to one another, having a sense of knowing your neighbor and being responsible for your neighbor. And nothing cultivates that more in people than family, followed by the church. And so to say that this man is untethered to society is to say he's married and unchurched. Like, those two things are kind of synonyms.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, John, it's interesting to me that Jesus talks about the importance of friendship. In John chapter 15, he says, he was talking to his disciples, no longer do I call you servants, but I now call you friends. And, you know, I just think that we live in a world, in a society where true friendship is just so rare. And that one of the things that, you know, those of us who are Christians can do, if we want to live out what it, you know, a Christian worldview in our families and in our churches and in our communities, is just to have good friends and be a good friend. And you never know what the ripple effect of just being a good friend to somebody that needs a friend might have, not only for your own life and their lives, but for the communities in which we live.
Well, and it's a culturally critical moment to do this. I mean, this is a society in which you can be connected with everyone digitally and be absolutely isolated as a human being, right? You can have tons of friends on Facebook, but not actually have any friends. I mean, that's really the way this culture is. I mean, this is kind of referring back to Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone. More people are bowling, more people are doing stuff, but fewer people belong to a bowling league. And a bowling league is kind of a small indicator of something much larger, that people just don't belong to each other anymore. That's a huge opportunity for us. And it's also, I think, a reminder for Christians who are throwing their hands up, maybe because of the march of kind of this new sexual ideology, because of what they saw in Virginia and New York this past week with these kind of hyper radical abortion laws, to say that all is lost and there's nothing that we can do. Well, really, like, this is something you can do. You can actually care for your own backyard. You can actually look outside your own window and say, what kind of influence can I have in this moment, in this place? And actually, this is a way that culture is ultimately restored. Hey, I want to point people just to one more thing, though, before we go. One of the guys, by the way, that talks so much about what it means to be a Christian in society is C.S. Lewis. We had such a cool Breakpoint where we actually, if you missed Breakpoint this week, if you missed the Breakpoint on C.S. Lewis, you can actually hear C.S. Lewis in his own voice. That was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was amazing, actually.
Well, see, Lewis, the book Mere Christianity, so much of what we know Lewis for, started out as a radio broadcast during the middle of World War II. And that's actually, there's one surviving clip, and we played it this week on Breakpoint. It was really remarkable. But one of the things we want to tell people is you have an opportunity to study Lewis. There are those individuals that are more relevant than ever. When you talk about books like The Abolition of Man or The Screwtape Letters, when you talk about the insights into the human condition that you see even in something like The Chronicles of Narnia, these are timeless things. It's why Lewis has become such a beloved figure for so many followers of Christ. And there's a great opportunity that folks have to actually spend the next 4 weeks learning about Lewis with us at the Colson Center. Warren, I want you to tell them about it.
Yeah, it's we've got Lewis Marcos, who is with the Houston Baptist University. And I would say, John, and I don't think you disagree with me, one of the world's leading experts on C.S. Lewis, and also just a wonderful, godly man in his own right, a great communicator. He's going to be teaching a short course that we're doing online. It's an online webinar, four consecutive weeks. Most of it will be Dr. Marcos. I'll be sort of facilitating and emceeing it along with Shane Morris, who is one of our colleagues here at the Colson Center as well. I'm really excited about that. We already have a couple hundred people signed up for that course, but it's not too late to sign up. All you have to do is go to breakpoint.org and you'll see a link to sign up for that class.
Listen, this is going to be one of our best. These short courses are easy. They're consumable. And if you have to miss a week, you can always get the recording of it. It's done, as Warren said, on webinar the next four Wednesday nights. Come to breakpoint.org and you can find out information on how to sign up for the short course on C.S. Lewis with Dr. Lou Marcos of Houston Baptist University. And also come to breakpoint.org. Click on the button there on the homepage. It says resources mentioned on the radio and podcast. And you will find various articles and resources on the topics that we talked about, especially those who horrific abortion bills in New York and in Virginia, and perhaps coming to a state near you. Thanks for joining us on Breakpoint This Week. For Warren Smith, I'm John Stone Street. We'll see you next time.